And we are now here with Zach Stevens, the singer of Circle to Circle, formerly of Sabotage. And also he does work with Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Zach, for my first question for you, what are you currently up to? And what's your current band, Circle to Circle, up to right now?
Yeah, this is the fourth Circle to Circle album, called Delusions of Grandeur. Just released it last week. So we're out there hitting it hard in the press and the radio. And it's doing well. It's doing real well, so we're looking forward to supporting it, especially on the tour this fall with John Oliva's Pain. We're going out in the States. Start out with a 2 or 3 week run and probably follow it up with a West Coast thing shortly thereafter. And we probably will go to Europe, J-O-P, later on this fall, too.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on several little tours over there, one in the beginning of the year. Next year with another band, but you know, we recognize strong, and you know, we had a good time making it, so we hope everybody enjoys it. It's a little bit more aggressive approach this time. We changed studios. We did Mars Sound here in Tampa, which is the top studio in Tampa for the first 3 hours. We just said, hey, with this little change in sound and the way these songs are going down in the writing stage, we'll flip over and look for just a different environment to go along with this thing. So we found Jay Stanley Productions in Orlando, Florida, and the band that was going out the door when we were coming in was Seven Dust. So we figured, okay, we got some folks founding this little neighborhood. Actually, it's a big house in the middle of a kind of a ritzy neighborhood, but that's the second floor of the house is the studio. So kind of neat that it's a home-based recording studio, but it gets some great sounds out of there. So we were, you know, really happy with it, so that's pretty much where we stand now, getting ready to push this thing.
Now, it seemed to me, Zach, that Circle to Circle was kind of more of a project, I guess, for you at the beginning, and now you guys seem to be touring a lot, and are you going to be touring up here pretty soon? And was this band a project at first, and, you know, how do you see it?
Well, we did a fair amount, you know, over in Europe, and we're doing more now. You know, I think we always had the envision that it was going to be a band. In the beginning, I think everybody gets that idea that it's a project because it's Zach Stevens and, you know, I'm the most known person in there. So in the beginning, I think you're always going to have that impression of a project, even though the long-term goal of it was just to be a band and, you know, work together. And now we're there. And, you know, the band vision has come full circle. And, you know, they're doing a great job with it. All the guys, you know, they're sticking with it. Pretty monster lineup, you know, as far as covering the bass on all the instruments and stuff like that. So we just wanted to offer a really hard-hitting band that's, you know, kind of like a monster level on each position in the band and just grow from there, you know, as a unit. So that's where we're at with Delusions.
Zach, why did you decide to release the song Every Last Thing as your single for the album?
That's the single for Europe. The one you got should be So Many Reasons.
I bought the single from Europe before the album came out. Yeah, I was when I find a band that I like, I usually go out and buy the stuff a little bit early.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's more of a European feel. They kind of like the piano stuff, so they chose the Every Last Thing for the single in Europe. That's kind of more, what might be more reminiscent of the, you know, from the old, you know, Sabotage days or whatever that we used to kind of do.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that counterpoint vocal stuff I used to make it on the Circle to Circle records, but yeah, that's kind of the same approach they take over there. Yet when you come over to America, you know, you got this exact same layout, except you'll see the single So Many Reasons. So, you know, a little bit more of a rock, you know, rocker type approach. Straightforward rock, you know. I mean, it's like heavy metal, but, you know, you get a little taste of that southern metal, like what we like to call it, like a southern rock almost, this lineup now. I mean, you know, I'm from South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Three guys are from Nashville, and Andy Lee, the lead guitarist, is Biloxi, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
So you're gonna, I think we're gonna start picking up on some of that southern rock influence, seeing where these guys are from. So it kind of definitely appeared on this album. So I think stuff like So Many Reasons and Soulbreaker, you know, Chase the Lies, different, you know, songs like that on the regular album are kind of now starting to show that southern rock, southern metal, you know, influence that has probably been trying to come out for years now. It's just kind of now manifesting. So, you know, that's just an example of some of the sounds I'm picking up on this album. So I think we'll probably capitalize on that going forward. But yeah, the Southern heritage of the guys is definitely showing through on this album.
Zach, I found it funny that John Oliva's Pain, the lineup he has, was the same lineup you had on your first Circle to Circle album.
That pretty much is my lineup. You know, there was some, we made some decisions there after the first album. It's like, well, is this going to do for the long haul? And, you know, based on feedback and everything from everybody and the fact that they didn't really get along with my management at the time, which we no longer have, you know, I guess they figured, you know, they would like to, you know, step aside. So I said, all right, that's fine. And, you know, shortly thereafter, John says, hey, I'm looking for a band, but I really don't want to really put a lot of effort into this. Okay, you don't have to here. And so that's when we made the switch, and now we've got three albums, you know, heading to a fourth album with the same lineup. So now the stability factor's there to the point where I like it. But it was pretty much a mutual decision between everybody, you know, based on the situation. So they said, hey, can we flip sides? Surely. You know, go ahead, and, you know, maybe it worked out for everybody, I think.
The album you released before, Delusions of Grandeur, The Burden of Truth, it was a concept album, and explain to me, what was that concept about?
Well, it was kind of like a musical sequel to the Da Vinci Code movie, you know. We all kind of went and checked it out, and, you know, we had little hints of stuff like that even in the first two albums before that. I don't know if it picked up in the lyrics and stuff, but I've always been a little bit fascinated with that whole concept of having that, you know, representative that could be the bloodline of Jesus Christ, just crazy stuff. But really, we went full-blown with the concept on Burden of Truth, and really, it was just supposed to be a musical sequel to a movie-type story where we kind of took where the movie ended, and we took that central character that was the direct bloodline, who was a female in the movie, and we kind of flipped it to become a male character and then go off on a mission to save the world from all the craziness that was existing back 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. That's even more so now in every area. Every area that I looked into is actually more escalated in the world with the fact of everything going the wrong way. And this guy actually comes in and was able to turn things around, both kind of like almost in a politically and even in a military or militarily, he was able to do that in the story. So, you know, we had the story to build the whole album around, and kind of like a puzzle piece thing where when you're writing a concept album, you kind of know what's missing. So that part of it actually is a little bit easier to me, writing records, when you do a concept album, because you know what pieces are missing and you know what has to be filled in. On a record like Delusions of Grandeur that's not a concept album, it's sometimes harder, because once you get, you know, the 13 songs we wound up with, then you got to kind of hope that they all go together somehow. But the order did work out well, and it kind of takes you on a flow, much like a concept album, really. Except it's just not a concept album this time, but it has a definite, you know, flow to the album order, so that worked out well. But that was pretty much what Burden of Truth was about, just a, you know, the full, you know, story after the story. And, you know, you're free to embellish on what you want, and then kind of let the music feed off of the story. So we were kind of, you know, kind of impressed at how the music kind of took off and had a life of its own, just building off of a story. Mm-hmm. So it is interesting how it takes you musically and the directions that it takes you. But, you know, again, you're going to be within the confines of that type of feel. So, you know, every song reeks of that story and that feel. I think after doing that, we said, hey, wow, let's do something kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum on the next album. So that's how we came with Delusions of Grandeur.
Zach, the musical direction on this new album was a lot more aggressive, and it's a lot heavier than the previous three albums Circle to Circle has released. And why did you decide to go with this type of more aggressive, heavier direction on the album?
Well, it just, in the initial writing of the first couple or three songs of this new album, we could tell that there was aggression, you know, personally, or, you know, within the writers of the band or whatever. And, you know, the songs were taking on a little bit different approach. I think it was a kind of a wish list of what they wished could have been a little piece of the last album or whatever it was, you know, personal to them. So that's when it became pretty evident that it was going to be a different animal.
Mm-hmm.
So really, it was kind of just a natural progression of where everybody wanted to go musically. It just took a, you know, we knew we wanted to do something a little bit different rather than kind of fall in that same bucket. You're going to need to be a little bit more, you know, outside the box, so to speak, to get attention on this album based on what we did with that concept record on the last album. So a little piece of all that kind of thinking kind of went into the cauldron. And, you know, it did turn out to be a different animal. Every Circle to Circle album has been a completely different animal. So I imagine the next one's going to be a lot different. But, you know, it did fit its place, and we're happy with the way it turned out.
We are still here with Zach Stevens of Circle to Circle, formerly of Sabotage. Zach, you do work with Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and what's it like to work with Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and are you doing anything currently with TSO?
I just worked on TSO last week, as a matter of fact.
Really?
On the new album. And we did some vocal sessions, mailed back vocals and things like that, and still amazing stuff. Can't share too much about it, but it's part of the upcoming release, but you know, back in there again, and, you know, it's a lot of the same stuff I do with Circle to Circle. I'm more of a producer, you know, in Circle to Circle, even though I did share the producing duties with Paul Michael Stewart, our bassist this time.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the share of producing credit because he was there every day. You know, that's my only criteria. If you're going to try to take a piece of producing, you're going to be every day from the writing to when we turn it in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a pretty tough thing. But Mitch did a great job hanging right in there and helped me out a lot, so he deserves that. You know, TSO is a lot like that. They just have their own kind of order. It's a much bigger operation, so they have to be a lot more particular with their scheduling. You know, they do things in blocks of similar types of events. So their scheduling effort is very complicated compared to something like a Circle to Circle that has a 5-member band. You just come in and I say, bang out the music for a month or 3 weeks or however long, and then I'll come in with the vocal.
Mm-hmm.
And record it wherever I'm comfy. You know, I didn't do a lot of the vocals in Orlando, like where the band recorded, because it's just so far to drive to do a vocal session. You know, I stick with my home studio here, Red Room Vocal Studio in Tampa, and that's pretty much the sound that you hear all over. I did 3 songs in Orlando, but 10 of them I actually did in Tampa, because, you know, singing's a mental game as much as anything. And
definitely,
if you get in a car and drive, you know, if you get in a car and drive an hour and a half, you might just lose it up top. So.
Yeah, you lose your drive, actually, especially with the air conditioning.
Right. It can be crazy. You don't want to get your game off the mental aspect. To me, singing's about 90% mental and 10% physical.
Yep.
So, you know, so it was a more of a scheduling kind of, you know, science to TSO when they have to do things. You know, you got 15 singers, you got the band, the musical aspect of it, but mostly with that vast majority of singers that they have, you know, you have to be a little bit more creative with the scheduling. That's about the only difference I really see as far as working on TSO, you know, in regards to, in comparison to every other thing I've been working on. Seems like I hadn't left the studio this whole year because I'm doing the Wicked Witch, which was the precursor to getting me and Jeff Plate in Sabotage. You know, I came first, and then I brought Jeff Plate, who was the drummer in Wicked Witch back in Boston in the early 90s. He's now the drummer, one of the drummers for TSO. So I got to see Jeff when he came to town to do some TSO tracks, and you know, we're doing the Wicked Witch House together, doing releasing 12 songs that we previously never made it to an album.
Wow, you're doing the new Wicked Witch stuff. Now, for the new Wicked Witch album you're going to put out, is this all the old material of stuff that you did back then, or is there a lot of new stuff that you've written for this?
No, it's just all the stuff we did back then. It's 12 songs. We had done some demo stuff with Bob St. John, the guy who used to produce the band Extreme way back when, out of Boston. So we remembered when Extreme used to be called the X-Dream, but I think somebody had that name, so they had to change it from X-Dream to Extreme, imagine. But anyway, so we're releasing all 12 of those songs and pretty much all material we wrote back then, just because everybody, you know, we had a lot of people asking about it and everything. We got a small little deal to do that. So that'll be coming out next year. So I'm just about done. I'm 9 out of 12 songs completed. So I'm going to continue this week and try to get that out, and you know, continue working on press and everything for Circle to Circle. So it's been kind of crazy busy working on TSO, Circle to Circle, and Wicked Witch and all that.
Zach, as a singer and a musician myself for quite a number of years, the way I approach myself in a studio with singing is basically, I always have the music a lot louder than my actual voice. Otherwise, I may end up going out of key. My question for you is, how do you approach your singing in a studio? And what kind of mentality do you have in a studio? And how do you approach doing your vocals when you record?
Well, I don't really have the music all that loud. I kind of keep it to where I can hear more of the vocal and, you know, a bit of music in there. And some stuff I do it with both cans on. I usually do the if I do any doubling, I don't play the other track.
Mm-hmm.
I just sing it. I'm at the point where I can, if I sing something three times, it's going to be pretty darn close to exactly the same. So I don't double with hearing the other track. Yeah. But I don't know. On some stuff, I keep one ear off. Other stuff, I'll, you know, keep both cans on both ears. It just depends on what the part is. And if I'm doing like a group male vocal session, like with TSO, I hardly even have the cans on at all. You know, just enough. I just kind of barely up to one ear. And then when I start singing, I just bring it completely away. I'm then concentrating on the other singers around me and, you know, trying to blend. So there's a lot of different things that go on, you know, what you apply in the studio vocally, depending on the song.
Mm-hmm.
Zach, you have your own band now as a former member of Sabotage. And John Oliva has his own band, John Oliva's Pain, which sounds a lot like Sabotage. And then you have Chris Caffery, who also has his own band. Has there been any talk, to your knowledge, of a Sabotage, I guess, reunion or a tour or an album or anything like that? Has there any been any talk about, you know, resurrecting the Sabotage name and having that band active again?
Yeah, there has been. Mostly between the guys in the band, just kind of, you know, liking the fact that one day we may be able to do that. You know, there's definitely been talk about it. There's been no set date to do it, but I think it's probably something that'll be coming. It's just a matter of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know why you wouldn't want to do it. I know the money offers and things like that for shows around the world are high. So, you know, I don't see anybody going around rejecting money these days, especially in this tight economy. So, you know, I think it's just a matter of time. There's a lot of bands doing, you know, reunions. Everybody who was a band in the 80s or 90s is doing a reunion right now. And I think that, you know, Paul O'Neill doesn't want to get caught up in all that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wants to wait, let some of that reunion business kind of die down, and then we'll come out at the right time.
And speaking of Sabotage, since we're on that subject, why did you originally leave the band?
There's a good one. Well, you know, it was just really because I just had a lot going on in my life. At the time, I had a newborn. My daughter, who's 10 years old now,
mm-hmm.
was just born, and it was my first kid, and we were moving at the same time, so I just needed about 2 or 3 months just to get settled back in with a newborn, to be a first-time parent. That was about it. It was just a first-time parent kind of thing, you know, making sure that I was at home enough to take care of my wife and, you know, get through all that in the beginning. That just happened to be at a time where it was very, you know, in between albums, and it was definitely in between albums. It was before the Poets and Mad Men album, and I had actually been working on that up in New York City for a while, but I just had a time where I needed to take some time off, and I wasn't able to live in the city like the usual 3 or 4 months straight.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it, and I figured it was a short-term kind of thing, you know, but then they kind of made some moves on the vocal department, and, you know, due to moves they made, it took a long term, and then they never made another album ever again.
Yeah.
So that was all I knew about it. I did a thing for the short term, and it turned into a long thing, and next thing you know, there was never, ever a Sabotage album again.
Yeah. Well,
I have to ask the powers that be about all that. I don't know.
Zach, growing up, what were some of your musical influences as far as singing goes and as a musician?
Wow, I don't know. It was like Judas Priest and, you know, Iron Maiden, Bruce Dickinson, Ronnie Dio, Jeff Tate. Because when I was in college, you know, they came out with Operation Mindcrime, and that was unreal. You know, all my friends just sitting around going, God, how do they do this? So, you know, I had a lot of influences at the time, you know. I mean, that was pretty much my kid, the growing up days, you know, where you just kind of like everybody and try to sing like everybody, but you can't really sing like anyone. Then, you know, you get disillusioned and you go, oh, geez, what now? Then after college, I went out, and that's when I decided to kind of make the switch from being a drummer to the front man vocal role, because my first instrument's always been drums. So I've been playing for 30 years or something like that.
You've been playing drums?
I do my fair share on the Circle to Circle albums. I didn't do it at all on Duluth, but the first three albums, I played quite a lot of the tracks. But, you know, I still enjoy that. I still get together with some friends locally and, you know, play a lot of drums, and it keeps me in shape, too, so that's on my own. When I get bored with working out, I get on the drums because it's not so boring. But, you know, I just made that jump to lead vocalists, and you may hear some lightning cracking. We are in the lightning capital of the world, so
That's
I'm right in the middle of a big storm right now. So
it's like 1,000 degrees here.
But, you know, that was about it, really. And just, you know, it was pretty much all that metal, the 80s, 90s metal influences on the vocals there.
Do you think that illegal downloading has hurt the band? Hurt you at all?
I'm sure it has. It's pretty much hurt everyone. So, you know, I'm sure it has. I don't know the exact numbers or anything like that, but, you know, my labels still continue to print out a bunch of records, and we're even selling vinyl. We even have a picture disc vinyl that's coming out, that's already out there, I see on the websites for Delusions of Grandeur. So, you know, even vinyl's making a comeback.
Mm-hmm. Aside from your own music, Zach, you know, what are you listening to currently? What does Zach Stevens have in his CD player right now?
Well, I listen to a various, pretty wide variety. You know, I just got, like, the new Disturbed album. I picked up Judas Priest, you know, concept album about Nostradamus.
What do you think of the Priest album?
Cause it's
yeah,
awesome.
I think
it's great. I'm just now kind of digging into it as well as that Disturbed, which is kind of really good. I like, you know, and I got it, my 10-year-old. And my daughter listens to everything that's alternative rock, so, you know, geez, you get everything. 10 Seconds to Mars, Plain White Tees, Panic at the Disco, oh, God. I wind up listening to everything. I guess I appreciate everything, but it's not like I'm going to go say that 10 Seconds to Mars is, you know, my album. You know, I have to listen to this stuff because, of course, my daughter's going to dominate whatever listening device that we're around at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I guess thanks to her, I'm up on to speed on really any kind of alternative rock that's out there. But I listen to the traditional metal still, you know, Black Sabbath. I went to that tour with Dio, you know, they call it Heaven and Hell.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think I'm doing good. I'm, you know, still listening to everything as far as in the gamut of rock. You know, even classical music, just to relax from time to time, because I need a little bit of that. I keep forgetting to relax at all. But and, you know, all those influences, you know, trying to keep up with the new stuff is really kind of what makes it a little bit onto each Circle to Circle album, too. So I think I challenge myself to keep up with all the brand new stuff as well as, you know, maybe some new releases from some of my old, you know, favorite artists growing up. So that's going to be what hopefully makes it on, you know, from a influence standpoint onto even, you know, Circle to Circle albums.
Okay, Zach, for my final question, you have been obviously touring the world for a long time in Sabotage and in your current band. What's the craziest thing you think you have ever seen being on tour?
Besides power outages and stuff, where you're playing like, hello? I don't know. Probably going back to Brazil with Sabotage. I mean, we just went to Brazil with Circle to Circle, which was a fantastic week-long 4-city tour, but it keeps bringing me back to the time when we finished and playing Sao Paulo with Sabotage. Some fan jumped up on the bus as we're pulling away from the venue, and you know, he's up on the roof going through the city of Sao Paulo, and they got, you know, 5 o'clock traffic 24/7. So the bus driver all of a sudden starts swerving and trying to dump this guy off the roof of the bus. It was like something out of a movie. So he finally scraps down, you know, he's scratching and clawing, but the bus driver keeps going, rawr, rawr, you know, left and right. So he finally throws him off the side of the bus. There you go. Woo, it's a good storm here. Pick up on the radio. This is what Tampa's all about. Thunder and metal. But anyway, he finally threw him off the side. He lands into a ditch on the side of the road. He's rolling, you know, like, boom, and it was just so strange. But I guess that's what happens when you know, fans get up on the roof of the bus and they were not authorized. So we called him, and he became known as the Chupacabra. And that was about it. I think that's probably the craziest thing I've ever seen, really.